Yeah, you ready? Let's do it.
Hello, Honest, everyone.
What got real this weekend?
Got really real. Week two of the finals of the NRL podcast. Hello, everyone. It was two of the at least the most entertaining games I caught this year. Yeah, both ways. All four teams legitimately had a chance to win these games. Legitimately.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And they, yeah, I guess they were high octane enough. I kept on the edge, especially that first game that we'll talk about in a sec, the Friday game. I was sort of on the edge of my seat because purely on a Storm fan base. On one hand, I wanted the Raiders to win because I didn't want to see the Roosters three-peat, but then I didn't want the Raiders to win because I don't like facing Raiders because they're our bogey side. So
yeah, well, they split their games this year, didn't they? One each.
Yeah, but then last year they towed us, and they're our bogey side. But they did win this game, 22-18 over the Roosters, which have effectively finished the Roosters season, so no three-peat.
I guess I have to sort of apologise to Roosters fans out there, but I'm sorry, I couldn't. We said it a couple of weeks ago, I couldn't handle a Roosters three-peat.
Cool, I couldn't handle it either. I don't think anybody can handle it. But the Raiders got off a hot start. I mean, a really sort of hot start. You know, just across the board, Papali, my God, he just, you know, how the hell do you stop someone like that at 10 metres out?
The thing I go to the lead up to that try, and it was a pretty soft penalty on...
Yep.
Jack, on Jared Rhea Hargraves, who sort of, you know, hit Jack White after his kick. Man, look, not to bring, you know, the Cowboys are far from gone. You see some of the hits that Jonathan Thurston used to take, and you go back through the halfbacks, even though the last few years, like the good halfbacks that are out there. You look at some of the shots they take, and there's no penalty. They're hit in the air. They're hit vulnerably. And this was nothing. This was a nothing penalty. This is a BS penalty, in my opinion.
I thought the ruck infringement by Jake Friend was sort of the telling point of that. I mean, I get what you mean, but that Jake Friend didn't need to have a ruck infringement a minute later, which sort of set them up for the try.
No, that's right. And it gave him an extra leg up. So you just that's what the Roosters have sort of been notorious for, even though the ruck infringement rule, six again rule, has come in, they're not that bad at it this year. But you know, in previous years, obviously before the six again rule, they would just give away penalties, especially right at the start of the game. Say 5-6 minutes into the game, they would just back themselves defensively and just give away the penalty.
I just thought once they got on that hot start, then George Williams trying the 17th million, just a little bit of – he's just a nuggety sort of – just a little bit of individual brilliance by himself. Just a nuggety sort of – well, I guess all their players, like they're ball-running halves, both of them, especially Jack White, of course.
Williams got a good kicking game on him.
Williams has a great kicking game. Very, very, very
– how bad did he smash himself on the goalpost when he scored, though? Oh man, that could have been really nasty if he sort of hit that in the wrong spot as he sort of gets under the sticks there.
Very accurate kicker, like in terms of that getting that sort of repeat set or anything like that.
That's right. And I thought there was a lot of questions. I think when he come across from England, to come in and play for the Raiders, and I just saw a thing quickly on NRL Tonight. It might have been NRL 360, and they had an interview with Ricky Stewart, and he just basically for the first half of the year he just wanted to hone in on George Williams' own skills, and then as the year progressed and he got about halfway through the year, then he tried to change the way he plays a little bit and possibly be a little bit more of a ball runner, take on the line a little bit more and have that dual threat with him and Jack White, and it seems to have worked, and I'm not quite a believer just yet. I still think the loss of Josh Hodgson will come back and not so much bite them, but come back and hurt them in big games. Yeah. And like you said, they've got Melbourne coming up. So, but that's Tom Starling hasn't really put a foot wrong, you know, since sort of taking over from Havili there as being the permanent dummy half. But
yeah.
I just think that he's too important the way that he plays, and all you got to do is have a look at the next game. Or you know, we won't talk about the next game yet, but the next game.
I agree.
I thought got overawed by the moment of the finals, and yeah, he had a bit of an unforgettable couple of minutes at the end of the game. But yeah,
he quickly also became he's co-captain with Jared Croker. So for you know, this is Josh Hodgson I'm talking about. For you know, to quickly be entrenched into that side and then become a co-captain, I just think and they've got someone by the name of Harry Russian coming next year. I think it's just a masterstroke by Ricky to find these Pommy guys. That Harry Russian's he's 19, a second rower from Blackpool. They've gone for 3 years. So they keep finding these sort of little Pommies, I guess, Pommy gems, and they're working.
Well, the thing is too, like a lot of the times when the Englishmen come over, you know, it's okay, we're doing well in the Super League, so let's go test ourselves. RL. Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah. This opponent is Harry Russin's. You know, again, he's only 19, but he's supposed to be the goods as well. But they are losing John Bateman. So
yeah, that's right. One in, one out.
Yeah, one in, one out. talking, I guess, of the forwards, God, that, I did mention Papali, but Joseph Tarpanay played phenomenal as well.
His try was crazy. That was just, a little bit of will and determination, and he sort of, I think he's come along in really big leaps and bounds since leaving Newcastle and coming to the Canberra Raiders. He's a real sort of integral part. Yeah. He's just a unit of a human, like, and he's got, fleet of foot. He's crazy footwork, and he's a big bopper. He's hard to pull down.
Yeah, well, post-interview, Papali was just mentioning that, obviously he got praise along with Tapanay, and he said, he took Tapanay under his wing, being a New Zealander. He just, and obviously another forward, I suppose, he just sort of honed in, and I just gave him those sort of skills, like you said, someone hard to pull down, just like Papali. So,
no, that's right. Papali's a nugget. This guy's range. He's big. He's tall.
Well, he's lock. He's a lock, which is he could play obviously anywhere. He could play any position.
Oh, he could absolutely play up front if he was put there.
Yeah. But they're we did say, like you said, I didn't think they'd get this far losing Josh Hodgson, but I think
absolutely not.
On the back of how Jack Whiten's playing, he's just so in form at the moment. And Charles Nicol-Klostak, that game, he didn't get nearly 300 metres, but he just, as a fullback, is pretty rare, but he just exhausted himself. Great. He seemed to be everywhere.
Oh, yeah, no, he was getting close to being gassed by the end of that game.
Yeah.
But, it could have been, it ended up being, 16-6 at half time. It nearly could have been a bit more, but... it's sort of Jordan Rapana jumped from the outside and didn't get his feet planted back in the field of play before catching that ball and scoring in the corner. I think it might have been about 6 or 7 minutes to go in the half. He looked very confident. It's just like even at full speed, you could see that he hadn't quite got his feet back in. And they wanted to go and check it anyway with the video referee, just so KFC could get himself some more time and advertise the popcorn chicken slab that was out there. But
how good does that look?
Oh my God! I went in there yesterday and they didn't have any bread, so I was very, very, very disappointed in that.
Yeah, because it's a different
kind of bread. I think a lot of it's just those stupid dinner rolls, but I don't know how the hell they do it. But yeah, I was a little disappointed when I couldn't. Couldn't go in there and get my popcorn chicken slab because they ran out of freaking bread.
I felt like Flanagan seems post-game seems to be copping a lot of flack compared to Carey. But
I thought both of them were ordinary.
They were. That's what I'm sort of, you know, Kyle Flanagan wasn't, he shouldn't have most of the blame. They've just sort of, guess, you know, put it under him because of how he was sort of during the whole year and when he got sort of dropped that one or two games. But I still think he's young enough and still good enough to be their, I guess, their future halfback. I don't, you know, see why people think they need to move him on. That's what they're talking about.
Oh, no. So what, that's what, why do they go out there and get him in the first place if they've got this young kid, Walker, and Adrian Lamb's kid there as well? Do you know what I mean? Like, why do they go, if they already had them there at the club, why do they go out and sign Kyle Flanagan in the first place?
I don't know. Because I
just have an abundance of riches at the halfback / 5A position.
I'll tell you what, like, if they let him go, or he goes, you know, he could go to any other as a halfback, and I think
fifteen other clubs have bloody stabbed their own mother to try and bloody, you know, to try and get him at the moment. Like, I thought he had a really solid year.
Yeah.
He had a good kicking boot on him. He was pretty accurate with conversions and penalty goals.
Yeah, definitely.
And the commentators sort of said it on Fox Sports as well. A lot of passes were hitting the deck, like they just weren't as crisp and clean as what they normally are, as what the Roosters are, sort of a bit of a well-oiled machine when it comes to that. A lot of passes were sort of going behind players. Tedesco made a couple of crucial errors. Him overshooting that sort of check.
Jack Whiten try.
By Williams for the Whiten try. That was just it's a cruel game. It can make the best people out there look like fools.
Yeah, and I think just in the next set too, I think he overshot the ball. Either he overshot the ball or it might have been just a cheap knock on. This is the next sort of couple of sets. Yeah, you're right. I mean, he still played great. That's just that one sort of crucial error that put him
out to 22-12 then, and that's, you know, in the context of this game, where points were sort of at a premium, whereas, you know, the previous week's finals games, it was just a points fest. So this game, yeah, sort of points were at a bit of a premium. Yeah, they ended up getting one back. The Tupanua, like, very, very line ball. I think it was a Sonny Bill William offload, and then Tupanua sort of had a real short pass to Tedesco for him to go over next to the sticks. Kept them in the game a little bit. I thought it was a pretty line ball from Tupanua to Tedesco for that try to sort of make it 22-18, which ended up being the full time score. But it when it comes down to the crunch, it's when you're playing from behind, your season's on the line, it's really hard to claw back. And it was only 4 points, but Canberra did really well defensively to sort of to repel them and hold them out.
You know who did have a decent sort of game, to be completely honest, because I've been bagging him the whole year, is Sonny Bill Williams. He played pretty good. He got the right balls off. Like he got that arm free to sort of have that little pop up ball.
That's what he's about. That's what he does. He engages the line and he's always got that threat. You get that arm free and he sort of, you know, he's got one of the best offloads in the game. So that's what they got him there for. But I don't know. Is that a failed experiment getting him in there?
Of course it is. I mean, apparently they didn't pay much for him, and going off the way he played, I wouldn't have paid much for him either. But I think so. I mean,
they got him there to shore up that interchange and to push on for a three-peat and to get bounced in straight sets. Fair enough, they finished fourth, but you still get two bites at the cherry. And to go out, you know, to go out in straight sets, I think it would be extremely disappointing for him.
I think so, because I think there's more. There's something that's happened. I don't know if there's something previous or what, but something ever since that huge loss to South, that 60-8 loss to South, something's happened during that game or post game or pre game even. From then on, they've just played terribly. There's something that's happened that we're not we don't know about because.
Well, that's anyone around.
Unless it's just psychological. I don't know. Just that's a pretty big fall from grace. They went go from that 68, which is they were full strength, to getting out in straight sets like you just said. So I don't know. I don't know if there's something more there or they just capitulated. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's sort of become that they had instead of being a 70 to 80 minute team where they play well for that 70 odd minutes and that was enough for them. They dropped right off. Their intensity dropped right off. And they pretty much come back to the pack.
Mm.
So throughout the year and all the way through up until the last couple of rounds, they were well above and those top four sides I think were well above everybody except for maybe South that come into a good bit of form towards the end of the season. But for them to bow out the way that they did, I think they'd be very disappointed.
Well, they'll move on and they'll play Melbourne this Friday. The other finals was the Saturday game, the Rabbitohs you just mentioned, beating the Eels 38-24, which books them a spot against Penrith on this Saturday.
That was just bunches of points, just all in quick succession.
Yeah.
And it was pretty much a very, very big game of momentum and momentum swings.
Yeah. Because obviously, clearly, the first try wasn't, we're used to seeing so many quick tries. The first try wasn't until 16 minutes, Jackson Paulo. It was pretty even. It still felt even at halftime, even though the Eels were up at 18-8.
And that's the thing, they had that rush of tries. They scored three tries in 7 minutes.
Yeah.
Parramatta, they did. That's what I mean. Gutherson just had his hand in and around everything to do with those three tries. There was a scrum move that they did. I think it was for the third try. That's one of the best things that they did this year was having the ability to move the scrum wherever they wanted it. And most teams will put it in the middle of the field, but it sort of it opens up both sides. Then I think that's one of the best things that they did this year.
It's sort of like the NFL where they've got those two sides you can, I guess, not sort of pick from, but I know what you mean. You don't have to have it on that one side if you don't want it.
No, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, you can have it wherever. Oh, yeah, no, it's fantastic. The second try that they scored was off a junior Paulo sort of hit and spin and then just an offload back. Boom, George Jennings, and then Gutherson scored again, and you're just like, holy moly, that was just South really could have sort of gone, into the sheds at half time with their heads down, at 18-8, and go, wow, we had a lot of the momentum at the start of this game, and within 6 minutes, 7 minutes, it's all been taken away from us.
On the back of that, I think the person that turned around and he had his best game to me all year was Damien Cook.
Oh, absolutely.
He did what he, what we all know that he usually does. And just, he became that running dummy half, which all dummy halves are. But, he's phenomenally quick and he got out quick this time.
Well, he's a former winger.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a former, isn't he? A former 100 meter sprinter. I'm sure he is a former 100 meter, like proper 100 meter sprinter. So I'm very sure.
No, he doesn't get them legs up like a sprinter would. But he's only a short dude.
He's only a short guy.
Yeah.
I think in that, what was that gift race? Remember that one where you're like the handicap to the one? That's terrible to say. I mean like the handicap. Sorry, I meant not that kind of handicap. Sorry, but the handicap as in like. Certain people started. It's a 110 meter race. It's like the Stalwell gift, I think they call it. But it's like,
oh, righto.
You staggered start. You could be starting to wherever, depending on how fast you are or your age or whatever. Oh, I think he had something to do with that. But he's quick. That's really what I'm trying to say. He's a quick guy.
Yeah, very good. He
turned them around by getting out quick enough to create the opportunity for the likes of Cameron Murray and Liam Knight. They just.
Those early two tries,
yeah.
You know, or the two tries that were in that sort of first 20 odd minutes of the second half. Yeah, we're all off the back of Cook, quick play the balls.
Yeah.
Finding the markers slow, which what he did very, very well last year and probably hasn't done as well this year, up until probably the last three to four weeks. I think he's really sort of found his feet, so to speak.
Yeah.
And that was it then. Like that sort of took away Parramatta, and they just kept slowly, you know, steadily piling on the points. The momentum shift and momentum killer was the Mitchell Moses penalty goal doinked off the sticks.
Yeah, it was.
Just totally unaware. You know, they thought it was just an absolute given that he was going to slot the 2 points.
Which would have put them up.
They were just completely unaware about what was going on.
Yep.
And South ended up getting the ball back. Six tackles later, they're in. That's when sort of that steady avalanche of points by South Sydney then just kept coming and coming and coming. And you're like, all right, that has really sort of taken the momentum back away from Parramatta and given it all to South, and they didn't give it up.
Wasn't South have an embarrassment of riches in the back line? Like, Jackson Paulo played phenomenally well. They just, you know, Alex Johnson's been playing well all year. They've got Dane Gagai. They've got Latrell Mitchell missing and James Roberts is missing. So
Campbell Graham's been terrific for them most of the year. So that's really an embarrassment of riches.
They're surprising me. I didn't think they'd get this far, to be completely honest. I mean, maybe I should have looked more into that 60-8 game and just sort of seen what they were going to do. But I mean, they have the, you know, for all what people say about him, Cody Walker and Adam Reynolds play pretty well together.
No, that's right. I think a lot of people sort of almost put a line through him once Latrell Mitchell had that pretty nasty hamstring injury, and that sort of took away that little bit of X factor of theirs from the back. But, you know, like you said, you know, guys like Jackson Paulo, Alex Johnston has been just on fire the last few weeks. Cam Murray has been pretty solid and consistent all year. You know, they've got a decent bench that they can sort of rely on. You know, they've got the likes of Liam Knight coming off the bench, who most teams he would be an absolute starter.
Yeah.
So, and to Parramatta's credit, you know, scoring 24 points there without, you know, three big strike weapons that they'd lost throughout the week, you know, Mike Acevo gone, Blake Ferguson gone, and then the late withdrawal/suspension of Michael Jennings happening on Saturday morning with the performance enhancers saga that sort of come out on Saturday morning, which is just the absolute worst timing for that to happen to Parramatta.
For that to happen, yeah. I mean, Well, we wanted to talk about it, so I guess we can talk about it a little bit now. Look, I don't know who works out these timings, because you're right, I don't know. It's a killer. Yeah, the timing was a killer. But maybe it's a whole separate thing to the NRL. Like, maybe just if they find these findings, they've got a name. I don't know how it works.
It'd be an ASADA. Type thing. So, you know, I don't know when the A sample of his was taken. The article that I read on Saturday was all very breaking news. And
You've delved into it a little bit.
A little bit. Like, the A sample was taken and there was two substances that were found in the A sample, Lingrandrol. And the other stuff's called a butamorin or something like that. I haven't heard a lot of people say it, you know, and this is courtesy of NRL physio. So I don't know if you watch The Fan with Vossie and Lara Pitt, they have that NRL physio guy on there. And this is him, you know, his Twitter handle. And he said, Legrandrol increases growth muscle and helps repair. So I guess that's essentially a, you know, it's a steroid of some type. And the other one basically stimulates human growth hormones.
Yeah, okay. So it's a steroid.
Not the greatest things to be caught with. And as it sort of come out a little bit later, that was the same stuff that James Seguiaro was pinged for.
Yeah.
And that was an instant 4-year ban. So this is very, I think, sort of serious. And unless he can prove how it's gotten into his system inadvertently, I don't know how you go about proving that. Obviously, he's come out and denied that he himself or, you know, anybody around him has you know, willingly put this in his body. But it's not the greatest look for Michael Jennings at the moment. So you got to go out there and say, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But and they've just got to wait for the B sample to come back.
Like you said, anyway, that, but, you know, if it is found that for what Seguiaro had, it's an instant 4-year ban. He's 32 years old now. So to me, if that's it, that's him done, his career done, unfortunately.
As much as
it's hard to say, I don't know.
Right. As much as you'd like to think after 4 years, you'd be able to come back, but, you know, being 36 and you know, playing in that center position, how much of his speed that he'll lose, and you don't know. He looks like he's starting to become a little bit of a silver fox already. So it'll be interesting to it's all dependent on how the B sample comes back, and those things could take forever. So. It's playing the waiting game really for Michael Jennings, which kind of sucks because, you know, he's been a pretty good player throughout his career, you know, with Penrith early on to start with, and then with the Roosters. Then coming to Parramatta in the twilight of his career, I guess. And, you know, he's always been a terrific try scorer and a speedster. It sort of sucks that this has come out. You hope that it's not true. Everyone's going to have to just play the waiting game now.
Who do you think, moving on now to next week, then who are you looking at? So the Raiders will face a Storm and then Penrith will face, South. Do you have sort of an early sort of tip or which way you might think it'll go?
There's two ways to go about it, you know how enthusiastic Melbourne and Penrith come out of the blocks after having the week off. You know, it's the old conundrum of rest versus rust. I still think that the two classier sides will come through, but you know, Canberra and South have come through with all the momentum and they're the hot sides at the moment. So I don't think. Yeah, they're going to have to, both teams, Melbourne and Penrith, I still think those two will win, but they'll have to fight tooth and nail for it to push through. Both of those teams aren't going to give up this opportunity to go to a grand final away. And I would think that I think the team that would most be in trouble would be Penrith. I think Souths are hot. And I think Wayne Bennett will be getting into all of those boys' heads there, you know, saying nobody's given us a chance. You know, and he knows how to put the guys, you know, his players into the right sort of mind frame and the right psyche to get them up for this kind of game.
I'm a Melbourne fan, but I could still say even, you know, Canberra, with the momentum and the way they're playing, have a hugely legitimate chance of winning against Melbourne. It'll be interesting, obviously, if that ends up being the grand final, say Penrith and Canberra, as an example. The last time they played each other, the grand final was 1991. That was Penrith's first title.
That's right, yeah. And Canberra was going for a three-peat.
Yeah. So that'll be going back to the 90s when player who do you think the player of the year was back then? Just
1991. Oof.
I don't know
what Dally Ellis said. Dally, was it the Dally M then, or was it still the Rothmans medal?
It was the Rothmans medal.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe someone from Penrith, maybe someone like Brandy Alexander or someone like that.
Royce Simmons. It was a Canterbury Bankstown player by the name of Ewan McGrady.
Oh, my God. McGrady.
What a stud. Yeah, he was good. You know, great for a fullback player. Oh, my God,
Ewan McGrady was unbelievable.
Who did you have then over this week as your start of the week? Just thought I'd segue that in nicely.
Look, it's start of the week. You know, we mentioned him before. I thought Damien Cook was instrumental, especially in that second half.
Yeah.
For them to come out in that second half and to not have their bundle totally dropped after letting Parramatta score so quickly. That he just took advantage every single advantage that he could. And like you said, just super speed out of dummy half. He's starting to come into his own. And if I was Penrith, I would be extremely worried about him getting the jump on him out of dummy half if he keeps this sort of hot form on there.
I think also I wouldn't say there's doubters, but there was a lot of hot young number nine sort of gunning for his New South Wales jersey too. But after that sort of game, I think he's still the incumbent, and I think he's pretty entrenched in there now just after that game, at least for this season.
I would say so. I think it'd be pretty hard to unseat him
from
the
so.
Number nine. Like, you know, we've talked about Appy Coruscant all year. I think he'd be sort of hot on the heels to sort of take that number nine. But the momentum is a brilliant thing, and if they get all the way through to the grand final and then Origin's pretty much the week after that, you may as well ride the hot streak.
I think so.
There's no ifs or buts about it. You know, it's going to be one or the other. It's either going to be Coruscant or Damien Cook in a grand final. So I think you just ride the momentum.
And what did you have as your stud of the week? Dud. Sorry, you've already said stud.
Look, unfortunately, like I said, like we sort of mentioned a little bit earlier, I thought that Dylan Brown looked a little overawed by sudden death.
I suppose.
The sudden death. He's been terrific all year.
Yeah.
You know, he had that bit of injury layoff. He's take a leaf out of the Jerome Luai book. Like, he's looked great all year, you know, a young player, but in this sort of environment, season's on the line, he had 2 minutes to absolutely forget. You know, he threw an intercept to Jackson Paulo, which realistically sealed it for South. And pretty much like 2 minutes later, as they're trying to get back into the game, I think it was 32-18 at that point.
Yeah.
And he throws a pass. He throws a pass behind. I'm just trying to think who it is on that left hand edge. But it was just absolutely nowhere near where the ball was meant to go as they were trying to shift it out to the left. It goes behind the Parramatta attacking line. Souths pick it up and it essentially really shoots the game right in the foot. I think he's just got to be a little bit more composed when it comes to that. You know, Mitchell Moses, that's not so much on him, but you know, he's got to be the one to be taking control of those situations rather than leaving it to somebody like Dylan Brownie, who hasn't got a whole lot of finals experience.
And that was my sort of dud of the week, is not so much dud for Mitchell Moses. He didn't play terrible, but he also didn't play with, I guess, really, probably the expectation that Parramatta had on him to be that number seven in that game. He was a topsy-turvy sort of season. I think Dylan Brown had a better season than he did, personally.
Moses had those few weeks out as well. You know, both of those guys have had injury layoffs throughout the season. I thought he was him and Gutherson were terrific at the start of the season.
Oh, but Gutherson.
To sort of get Penrith, get Penrith off to that super hot start. And I guess that's I mean, once again, a top four side has been bounced in straight sets.
I think, yeah, Gutherson had such a better season all year. I just think it's probably just the expectation, but Mitchell Moses could have taken that game in the grasp, like, especially after having that halftime lead, and he just didn't. He really didn't. Maybe it was, unfortunately, the kick that he did, really, that really did turn the game.
That was 100% the momentum shift.
Yeah, I think so.
That penalty goal was, you know, even if it was 10 metres to the right hand, to the right hand side of the uprights, like a kicker of that caliber should have slotted that, and it hit the far post too. It didn't hit the near post; it hit the far post. The
far post, yeah.
So he's sort of given a little bit too much hook.
Yeah, hooked it. Yeah. I was trying to think of the golf term. He hasn't. He's hooked it big time.
What I mean, and that's all it takes in these kinds of games when they're sudden death, and your season's on the line. That's all it takes. And unfortunately, they sort of dropped their bundle a little bit, and South didn't let the foot off the pedal at all.
Well, that's all we had sort of for the I guess obviously there was only two final games. What we thought we'd talk about next is I guess sort of the bottom eight teams are looking at their sort of season review, what they might look like next year possibly. We'll only talk about four teams this time, and then next week we'll talk about another four teams because there's only other two games. So we'll start with we're looking at the bottom four, and I mean the absolute bottom four. So we'll start with the last place team, I guess, the Brisbane Broncos.
Yeah, who was that again? I can't quite remember.
Oh, mate, I could say it every day of the week, the Brisbane Broncos. Look, clearly for Brisbane Broncos, a season to forget. I mean, there's really no other way of looking at that. It is the most diabolical season that I think it's just because of the expectation. But it's hard to say I've ever seen, but it's probably because of the expectation that everybody puts
there's
on Brisbane.
There's always expectation on the Broncos. With Seibold being there, and you know they got off to the good start before the COVID break and won two games on the trot, and then it was just bizarre how it fell off so quickly. Like once the season resumed after 2 months, every team's gone through injuries, but you know they've had a pretty hefty injury toll as they sort of gone through the year, and it started poorly with Jack Bird once again being hurt again
at a training mishap.
He's on 975 a year, and he's played 17 games in 3 years.
Yeah,
and from what I've read, I think they've obviously got Kevvy Walters as their new coach. That's the golden child now. Kevvy wants to keep him around.
I have read that. I'm not buying too much into that. I don't know. I agree. I mean, look, Jack Bird's still technically got another season with him. So
that's
he's
right.
contracted next year. So even if he I guess looking at the other side is even if he doesn't want him around, you need a side that's going to take at least some of that contract or half of it because they're probably going to have to pay the other half.
That's right. And who's going to do that?
I don't know. That's the thing.
They've got no other choice but to fit the bill of Jack Bird and hope that next year, you know, it's a more injury less prone season and they can get some sort of gameplay out of him.
He might have to be the starting fullback, possibly. Who knows? Like this is where the Brisbane Broncos are at. They really, like, you really could go 1-7, and really you can't definitively say. You can say the names, but you can't tell me where they're going to be because it's hard to say where. You know, they signed Brodie Croft, who was supposed to be this big wide hope. For 3 years, and it ended up being Tommy Dearden that finished the season at halfback.
No, you've that's got... right. Well, that could sort of open the door a little bit for them, you know, that they could, whether Milford's days of being a top caliber fullback are past him. You know, they could put him back there and then have that Croft and Dearden. But then you've got the likes of Jake Turpin, you know, is Andrew McCulloch, you know, that was only a loan for Newcastle. Andrew McCulloch goes back, you know, what happens at dummy half?
I thought he signed. So he hasn't. Okay,
I have read recently that he's going back. It was only a loan deal.
For McCulloch or for Turpin?
For McCulloch.
Because Turpin's got a player option the next 2 years. So.
No, that's right. Yeah, so I mean that's a conundrum right there. And then, you know, is Jake Turpin just gonna just instantly take over? Like, he's had a little bit of an injury prone last couple of seasons as well. So
he's also showing a bit of
vulnerability.
You've also got Isaac Luke.
Isaac Luke signed there as well. So
I think just on the way they sort of finished, I think I'd be silly not to put. Katoni Staggs looked pretty good at that number six. If you're going to move Milford to the number one, he looked, it's only early days. Don't get me wrong. He looked like a Jack White.
He looked comfortable.
Yeah. He looked pretty comfortable. And Payne Huss has probably had the best season he has ever had for the Broncos. He, you know, the back of David Fifita getting injured.
No, that's right. Look, you know, Payne Huss was pumping out the big minutes. Just because that's, I mean, he was grossly out of form, but you know, he was still putting out the big minutes, you know, still putting out 70 to 75 minutes a game. So, you know, Fifita, you know, David Fifita is a massive loss, you know, obviously he's got that, is it an ankle injury that happened. So, you know, he's not going to be going to the Gold Coast absolutely at full strength to start with. But the other sort of big thing for me is what sort of frame of mind does Tevita Pangai Jr. come into the season with next year?
I don't know. Like, have they? I mean, so again, I've had all the contracts sort of lined up. He is signed. So he's signed for the next 2 years after this.
Oh
year.
Yeah, he's so, there. That's I mean, he's and it's at 650k a year. So. That they've got to try and balance him out a little bit to still have that aggression but not over aggression and to be a hindrance to the team by being suspended a lot. So that's where he's got to sort of draw the line a little bit, I guess.
I guess on the other flip side, they're going to I don't know what's going to be out there, but they are going to have Darius Boyd's money because he's retired. So and I think he finished
900,000.
Yeah, so that's a decent sort of money to play around with for next year. They're going. I don't know where they go. I don't know where they go because firstly, Kevin Walters, he's the Queensland or Broncos love child, but. He also has no NRL coaching experience yet.
No, he's got plenty of assistant experience.
So there's that, and really, it's hard to work out. It's hard to work out where he's going to put all these players. Really, the only player that really has, they've all got their spots. Don't get me wrong, but the only one that you could say is Payne Huss is your, and he's signed till 2024. He's your number eight or number 10. Like, that's set in stone. The rest could be anything. Like you said, the number nine could be different. The back line could – who knows what's going to happen in the back line.
That's right. I think they've got real issues. I think they've got real issues in the back line. They need to maybe go after a fullback possibly, and then you put Bird in the centres.
Yeah.
I think they need to go after some form of, you know, young star sort of fullback. And sort of, you know, possibly have to pay overs for him.
Yeah.
But I think that's the way to go. Possibly keep Milford and Dearden in the halves because Milford's on $1 million a season as well. So you can't simply just sort of get rid of him either. So.
No, I get that. It's unfortunately, like when you're a coach, what you're coming into with all these contracts.
Well, that's right. Roster management.
I guess they'll have a bit of money freed up. I don't know.
I like their forward pack. It's just a matter of putting it all together.
Yeah, you know, I Patrick really do
Patrick Carrigan is a great gun. So, they've got a good young forward pack. It's just a matter of trying to put it all together, and they just look so discombobulated all year. Just nothing came together. It was so sporadic. They 100% underachieved for the caliber of player that they've got on that side.
Yeah. They probably don't like the word, but they are still in a rebuild. They have to be. Until they sign the players that Kevin wants, they are in a rebuild. That's just the way it is. That's just that they'll still finish bottom four. I can't see a Broncos doing a back to back wooden spoons, but I'll think they'll finish outside the eight. I think it's pretty. I don't think they'll improve.
Possibility. I think there's going to be some teething problems to start off with next year. So, I don't think there's too much more really to say. Like you said, a season to forget.
Yeah.
And the golden boy's there now. So it's all up to Kevy.
So we'll move on to the Canterbury Bulldogs. Did they really have that many expectations coming into the season? I don't know. No, I didn't think so. No. That's a good. They didn't. And I think they still have sort of the right mix there, a little bit. They've let a lot of players go.
Tim Laffey, Marcelo Montoya, Kieran Foran, Jack Cogger, Aidan Tolman, like just to name a few. Like they just,
Tolman's the killer. I don't
that's
get that just, one.
That's brutal, man. Like he was one of their better players consistently throughout most of the year. And to just, and what is he, 32? To just go, right, you know, see, and turf him out the door. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, I can't work because he still played fairly consistent. Like really for the year, he played pretty well, I thought. They have picked up, like they picked up Luke Thompson towards the end of the year, and they picked up Nick Kotrick for next year as Blake Green, but he'll be injured probably half the year, and Corey Waddell from the Seagulls. Yeah. So
look, I don't think they got the full Luke Thompson experience. As he come in sort of basically halfway through the season, come into a really, really bad team. I think next year with a full preseason under his belt, I think that he will look much better, in regards to sort of a little bit of forward play. Tolman is a massive loss and I don't know who you replace him with. That's hard to replace. I guess the bright side, for the Bulldogs was, as the season went on, like their completion rate, they weren't beating themselves. They were just being outclassed by other teams.
Yeah.
They had the sixth best completion rate, throughout the season. So for a side that finished second to last, that's pretty admirable.
Yeah.
To be able to complete at a consistent rate of 79%, I think their percentage was. So that most games they're not beating themselves, and that's a good thing, and that's something that they can sort of look on to next year with Trent Barrett coming in and the couple of signings that they got. Obviously they need to. Well, they've let go of Jack Cogger, who's a half. You know, obviously Kieran Foran's gone as well. So they're on the lookout. They're on the lookout for some halves.
Well, where do you play? Like, you know, if Nick Kotrick's coming in, do you push Will Hoppawattie into the centres, or do you push Will Hoppawattie into the halves? I don't. I think
I wouldn't put Hoppawattie anywhere near the halves.
I think they're on the lookout.
To be in the back line somewhere.
Yeah, they have to be on the lookout for a six and a possibly even
six
a seven.
And like, a seven and a nine.
Because Lachlan Lewis really didn't have, you know, he played pretty well towards the end.
He'll be there. You know, Jeremy Marshall King is an average dummy half. So hopefully, those guys can sort of grow a little bit better. But I really think that they need to go after a six and or a, you know, and a seven, to sort of to, you know, Lachlan Lewis isn't that old, so just to sort of to push them along a little bit. Like you said, yeah, Blake Green is going to be a solid pickup for them. Lachlan Lewis and Blake Green as your halves combination doesn't really blow my skirt up at all.
No. I agree with that. Yeah, definitely not. Look, that and now probably again another team with a brand new coach does have obviously first grade experience, but another team that has to just they shouldn't go, and they've signed 3-year contracts, I think, both of them. You can't go in with expectations after their first year that they're going to just massively change wonders. It's just not going to happen.
What you can do is look for gradual improvement, and in year one is to try and get your roster where you want it to be for year two.
Yeah. The third team are your boys. North Queensland Cowboys. I nearly said Dallas. Oh my god, I've been talking about Dallas all day.
Oh, you gotta get the Dallas Cowboys off the brain.
Oh, I can't help but talk about them. I guess looking at it, well, yeah, a disappointing season. I mean, it's pretty evident. I don't know if you're all tired to when Valentine Holmes went down and got injured.
Holmes being injured, Morgan being injured for most of the season. He didn't come back. He didn't come back at full capacity after that shoulder surgery. So it just once again, everybody's dealing with injuries. But when you've got key guys like that, you're paying big bucks for Valentine Holmes.
Mm-hmm.
He spent most of the preseason there. It took a lot longer than what I thought for him to sort of shed his NFL body. Once he come back after that high ankle sprain and that surgery that he had, I thought he got a lot better as the weeks went on. He sort of looked like his upper body had slimmed down a little bit, and he was sort of back into a little bit more NRL shape.
Yeah.
That they had Taumalolo out for a couple of weeks towards the end of the season, but for them, something that Todd Payton is going to have to work on with whoever's going to be there. Another new coach. But he's got to teach them again how to tackle. Remember how to tackle? Do you remember this game? Yeah, you've got to tackle, because this year they just could not tackle their way out of a wet paper bag. They were just disgraceful.
And slide in the defense. Their whole back line, they just didn't seem to slide at all.
There was no trust. Absolutely no trust.
No, there was no. That, speaking of the back line, I don't – what happens there? Like, they did obviously sign Isaid Masters.
Come back throughout the end of the season. Like, it was just bizarre that they dropped him for 10 or 12 weeks.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden he comes back in. It's just, I hope that they can, as far as I know, that they've told him that he can look for another club.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've heard that.
And if he can't find another club, then what do they do? It's just like, okay, we're going to roll with it. Justin O'Neill looked not one, not two, not three, but four steps slower than what he did last year. They've lost Gavin Cooper, who was sort of pretty much the heart and soul of that team for a little while now. He looked a step slower this year. Opacek that they've let go, which I thought is a very strange move.
Yeah.
To let him go. I thought some of the games that he played this year was solid out in the centers. Asiata is looking for another team as well. He basically wants to be a starting 13, and that's just absolutely not going to happen at the Cowboys. So that's a big loss for the Cowboys, and they haven't really made any significant signings, new signings for next year. So
They need a front rower.
The glaring one that we just talked about is Aiden Tolman. I think he could come up there and really sort of shore up the 1-2 punch. Josh Maguire, I'm not sure what he's still under contract, but there's rumors that there's St. George rumors, there's Broncos rumors. I think he would be a massive loss if they let him go. I think he's sort of been the Mr. Fix It in the forward pack when they've had guys like Jordan McLean out for a little bit, and Taumalolo was out. He'd sort of slot into those into those positions. So
I think you're right. I mean, if they can get Tolman there, and like you say, just Maguire coming off the bench or something like that, or possibly Starr, I don't know. But you know, if you had Tolman and Jordan McLean, that's a pretty decent, you know, 8-1-2 in the front row.
That's right. And then you got Tamalolo as well, and
yeah,
you know, then it's not a bad
pickup.
Cohen Hess, who's been brought into the Origin squad. Is, you know, where does he sort of fit in? I think he's better as an impact player off the bench personally. Most times that he started, he's looked ordinary. I think he's an impact player, you know, 35 to 40 minutes off the bench. I think that's the best thing for him. And just sort of finally, I thought, you know, we sort of said it all year, a player that his hands let him down tremendously all year was Scott Drinkwater. Second most in the NRL for mistakes, you know, at 32, like that's, you know, and he missed a fair chunk of the season. Well, not a fair chunk of the season, but he missed a few weeks. So when he's on song, he's good.
Yeah.
So it'll be what they want to figure out as a halves combination, you know, in between Drinkwater and Morgan and Jake Clifford.
And that's, you know, that was the name I sort of thought, like, yeah, he was out. I don't, you know, a lot of people are talking or are calling for Morgan to move to the centres next year, is everything I keep reading.
It's a waste.
Well, the amount of money he's getting, I think it is a little bit of a waste. I just, I don't think it'll work. I mean, they're a lot of their cash is tied up to only a few players: Michael Morgan, Jason Tamalolo, and Valentine Holmes. So
it's a waste of a position. I think, yeah, you've got to keep Jake Clifford positive about, you know, his growth and development. I still think that the halves combination should be Drinkwater at 7. And Morgan at 6. Morgan's more of a runner. Drinkwater's got a pretty good kicking game on him and an unbelievable passing game. And you have to turn Michael Morgan into Jack Whiten. He's got a good kicking game. He has to be a ball runner, and he has to engage the line of defense. That's where he's at his most dangerous.
I think he could be. He could definitely be. Ball running. He was leading into that grand final in
2017 when they had that the hot streak.
Unbelievable.
And they made a grand final.
Yeah.
But that was his biggest attribute, was taking on the line.
I think they also finishing up on the Cowboys. They found a gem in Reece Robson. That was a great pickup.
Obviously Tabby Wai-Fadoa as well. But Reece Robson, look. With experience, he'll get better. Some games he sort of floated in and out.
Yeah.
So I think he'll be better for it next year. This would have been his first full-time year at number 9. You know, he got hurt at the end of the season, and they had to go to the likes of Reuben Cotter and to a lesser extent, Jake Granville. But, yeah, I think Reece Robson, they've got a good young core in key positions, and then you've got the likes of Tamalolo, so if they can shore up the bench and, you know, possibly get in another prop, a strike center, then happy days.
It's possible he probably needs to be a little bit more consistent, Tamalolo. Really.
Yeah, this is probably one of his, his least consistent seasons. You know, he had a few injuries. There was a couple of games where he sort of didn't have his lower leg sort of started to give out on him a little bit. He had that calf problem for a little while, and so I think that, yeah, if you haven't got the leg drive for a big man like him, then you're in a little bit of strife. So, look, that's, I mean, that Todd Payton's got his work cut out for him there. Yeah. Absolutely.
The last team was a team that, you know, going off last year and the way they sort of started, should have made the top 4, but just fell from grace towards the back end of the season. That's the Manly Seagulls. I don't know. They capitulated. I mean, we probably could all tie this to Tom Trbojevic. I mean, really.
Look, I think them and
possibly, you know, that evident.
Walker, yeah, Dylan Walker as well. I think they were two.
Yeah,
you know,
Dylan Walker. Good point.
Significant injuries for them, and it just that apparently their record as well without Tom Trbojevic is pretty average as well. So that's how much he means to this team. And then you put too much work and pressure on Daly Cherry Evans, unfortunately.
Who had, and interestingly enough, you're right, I think he had one of his better seasons. Well, I was sort of bagging him, but statistically, yeah, I wasn't bagging him. I just did, you know, he could have done a bit more, but, you know, I really sort of thought about it. He was really by himself, so I really didn't have a choice. You know,
they tried Lachlan Croker there at 5'8". I thought Cade Cust did fill in fairly well there at 5'8". Like, he's a bit of a nuggety sort of, you know, hard player. You know, takes on the line a lot, and, you know, and then he can rely on Cherry Evans to sort of have that more of a finesse game. You know, Cherry Evans had 20 try assists and 17 line break assists. Like, that's a pretty solid year. But unfortunately, it sort of made them extremely one-dimensional. You know, they had two of the best props that were going around, especially at the start of the year, with Aiden Fanua-Blake and Marty Tapau. You know, they've got one of the best lock forwards going around, and Jake Trbojevic. You know, they lost Moses Suli for bits and pieces of the season. George Tafua, who just cuts people in half defensively on a regular basis.
Yeah.
You know, they lost him at the end of the season. So it's not so much another rebuilding season. You know, they've lost Aiden Fanua-Blake. He's gone to the Warriors. So I think that's a bit of a loss. They haven't signed Danny Levi back to another contract, who basically filled in for Coruscant after he left to go to Penrith. So I think they do well in re-signing Danny Levi. I like the way that he plays. I liked him up at Newcastle. I think he would be well served to stick around there.
They also, on the back of, I guess, losing Adam Fanua-Blake, they signed that young Taniela Paseki for an extra 4 years
So they've got him. So
they sort of shored him up once they realized, well, not realized, that Fanua-Blake was, leaving. He, don't know, I think it was more what I've read is the wife just basically said, you know, sorry, we need to get out of Sydney. So that was pretty much that. you know, when the wife speaks, you got to do what you got
to
do.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Look, they're trying to rekindle a little bit of the past as well with Kieran Foran going back there. So whether that halves combination can sort
hasn't
of...
Hasn't been confirmed yet, but that's
no,
my,
it's not
my only...
It's, I mean, I think it's... If and when it comes out, it'll be the NRL's worst kept secret.
Well, that's right. The money that's actually going to come up, probably a guy that we've all forgot about, is Tony Williams, is unsigned.
And that's right, T-Rex.
Yeah.
Where's he been?
Yeah, so that was about 500 or so that'll get short up for them. So he's unsigned for next year.
He's fallen off the face of the planet.
Literally.
Remember him at Parramatta when he first come in? It's just like, holy mackerel, who is this thing?
And Joel Thompson's another one too. He's going over to St. Helens. So they're losing a bit of money. Fanua-Blake is then losing a bit of money that they could probably shore up in a couple of little key spots. I don't, maybe, you know, well, probably is going to be the 5'8" now.
They got a lot of money. They're like the Cowboys. They got a lot of money tied up in three players.
In three players, I get that.
Brothers,
but they,
and Daly Cherry Evans.
They could possibly, I think, maybe go after a lock or, you know, like you said, you like Danny Levi, so he's sort of not too bad.
I think he needs to stay there.
I don't know what they need. That's probably they're a hard team. As in, you're right. The amount of money that they've tied up to three players is also, you know, the three best players they have and the three best players that got them to the top four last year. Maybe they just sort of need to sit and wait and just wait for these guys to come back, possibly.
Possibly, yeah, same sort of thing, a little bit more strike in the back line.
Yeah.
George Tafua has been around for a little while now, so, you know, if you can get a strike winger or a strike center or, you know, somewhere along those lines, you know, maybe an 80-minute second rower there just to sort of shore up those positions. They obviously need, you know, they've got some big shoes to fill in Aiden Fanua-Blake leaving, so there's, you know, they'll be in the market for a prop or two as well. When Dylan Walker's healthy, I can only assume that he will revert back to the centres if Kieran Foran and DCE are your halves combination going forward. So how happy or unhappy will that make him? Because, you know, I think he'd sort of come out and said, I want to be in the halves. So
Probably why, like, yeah, I don't know. That's what I mean. I everything keeps saying Kieran Foran's going to go there, so you would think he's going to go
winning,
there.
Winning solves all your ails.
Well, of course. That's exactly right.
So if Dylan Walker's in the centres and they're winning, then, yeah, so be it. And I guess that's just the way that it is.
I think it's a forward death, like you sort of said. Like, you know, you're not only lost for Noah Blake. You know, Joel Thompson's another big name that they're losing as well. So, they possibly need to sort of dip in. You know, someone like, I know you want him, but someone like Tolman would be great there.
No, that's right. And at least he wouldn't have to move out of Sydney. So, yeah, I think that there's going to be some interesting players, especially Tolman. For bottom teams.
Tolman could go to, and you know, he could go to Melbourne for a lot. You know, if they end up, you know, they're losing Tino. I doubt it, but you know, that's a weird one. Tolman could be a great pickup for a lot of sides.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of sides. Oh God, he'd be good at Melbourne. I'm poaching already.
That's where he came from before he went to the Bulldogs.
Well, this is true. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
There's a lot of younger man back then.
Yeah. And I think he actually, you know, they give credit to Bellamy all the time, but I think he actually got better at Bulldogs personally.
Well, he's one of those players that's actually there that actually, you know, carried on, I guess, sort of that role that he played well in with Melbourne. And he continued on with it at another club. So, you know, that's good. You know, okay, all well and good. He's only a prop forward, but, you know, you can still have a look at what Adam Blair did. You know, when he left Melbourne and went to the Tigers, he was poo.
Yeah, well, good point. And then somehow he still kept getting that money, which is ridiculous. You know, that's right. I'm sure we'll talk about the Warriors in the next round, but
reputation.
Warriors are speaking of coaches coming in, that's going to be a basket case of a team. You know, they did admirable to what they had and where they were, but. Yeah, that team, I don't know. I don't know what that team could do. But I'm sure we'll talk about that next week. We're coming up sort of to that hour mark. Did you want to finish on the Daly M's or you want to save that till the next week?
No, well, I think the Daly M's usually before the grand final. So we'll roll with the Daly M's next week. But we sort of had a quick squizzy at what the points table looked like there.
Yeah.
Before everything went super secret. So we have our opinions on who we think's going to get there, but we'll tease that for next week.
Yeah. I think we've narrowed it to four players, I think, by the sounds of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think a lot of them are pretty, you know, evident, but we'll tease that for next week.
Yeah. Next week.
Well, that'll do it for this NRL pod. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Final Play Pod. Also on Facebook, is just search Final Play and it comes up straight away. You can get our pods everywhere, including gimco.com.au, which is great, clearly, all the time. Mojo King, Dom, you know, the men.
Love them.
Not taking their names at all, but yeah, it's very, very grateful as always.
Yeah, get it out. Check us out on Spotify as well. Give us a like, give us a follow. You know, obviously we're on SoundCloud as well. Give us a like, give us a follow. You can get our pods pretty much anywhere on Podbean, except for a certain
End of the year. End of the year.
Yeah, well, it's right. Christmas is coming.
I realize it's coming. All right. Have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. So just don't you worry that my fruit will be ready, Smith.
Yeah, right. Now I'm Miles. Christmas is coming. Plum. Right, got it.
What did you say? Christmas plum.
Yeah, Christmas is coming. Plum.
Yeah, winter is coming. Plum.
Yeah, that's right.
Have a good week, everyone.
See ya.